Today on The Grave Talks, Beacon to the Dead, a conversation with Alex Matsuo. Sometimes you find the spirits and sometimes they find you. Alex Matsuo is a person who has spent her life doing both, as an investigator and living her everyday life. Today we hear about her close encounters with her own death and the spirits that may have found her to be a beacon since. On The Grave Talks.
That's an interesting question. So for about a good year, I was looking for available places in the state of North Carolina that were accessible to, you know, multiple teams, basically anybody, because in North Carolina, a lot of the locations, they have exclusive contracts with teams, so they're not always available to the public. Sure. So I was trying to find this place. So that was one big reason why the Trivet Clinic appealed to me, was because it was available and there was no team or group or person that had quote unquote ownership of the space. So that was a big draw for me. But also after the first investigation there, I mean, for the most part, there wasn't a lot of activity, but then we had one moment where, you know, I was listening to the recording afterwards, where we were trying to play hide and seek. It was tag. We were trying to play tag with one of the child spirits in the basement. And I said, touch one of us, let us know who's it. And you hear this little voice go, tag. So I was hooked after that.
What about Yahtzee? Have you ever tried playing Yahtzee with the ghosts? That would be...
You know, believe it or not, I've never actually played Yahtzee, so I would need to learn how to play it before trying to play with it with a ghost.
Give me some of the background of the Trivet Clinic. I mean, tell me the history as far as you know it. How far does it go back? Let's take it to the beginning and kind of go through its lifespan and how it got to where it is today from 2018 when you started looking into it.
Yeah, so the Trivet Clinic has one of the most interesting histories of any location that I've been to. So it was built and opened in 1932 by a doctor named Dr. William Amos Trivet. And he had been studying medicine. He studied medicine, I believe, in Baltimore and Virginia, and was kind of going all over the place up north. But then he came back to North Carolina because his parents, you know, their health was going downhill, as it happens when people age. And so he was originally from the area, and the nearest major hospital was in Statesville, North Carolina, which today is about a 30-minute drive. But, you know, in 1932, it wasn't quite 30 minutes, especially since not everyone had a car. And so he essentially built this clinic so that, you know, that community could have access to healthcare, like minor things like tonsils being taken out, babies being born, maybe, you know, the occasional appendix removal, maybe emergency situations like car accidents or farming accidents, so that people didn't have to go all the way to Statesville to get treatment. Sadly, though, Dr. Trivet ended up passing away in 1938, after a really bad bout with pneumonia. So after that, his wife did try to keep the clinic going for about another year or two, but then it was eventually sold to a man by the name of Leo Rivers. And this man was quite, I would say he was fairly eccentric. You know, think of, he reminds me of Mr. Dink from the TV show Doug. Okay. You know, like always looking for like the next new trend that was happening. Like he had an antique store. He had a lot of different things going on. And with Mr. Rivers' business plan, he had opened a supper club in the basement of the clinic, but then on the main floor, he had a detox clinic. So
interesting,
you know. Yeah, it's very interesting.
So essentially he had a club going, and then in the basement, let's get you cleaned up after we get you all boozed up.
Basically.
It was almost like an early model for Las Vegas, where we have all these things. And then, oh, you need like the IV? Yeah, we can come to your hotel room and get that for you. Wow.
Yep. 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 And also, and this was something that the locals had told me, this isn't anything that can be found in the newspapers. He was also apparently not trafficking, but yeah, kind of trafficking harder liquor. Now, this was the 1930s, early 1940s, so it wasn't necessarily, you know, prohibition era, but, you know, harder liquor. I mean, even in North Carolina, you know, I have to go to the ABC store, even Virginia, I have to go to the ABC store if I want like vodka or tequila or moonshine or anything like that. So apparently Leo was also trafficking, I believe it was moonshine in the nurse's quarters, which was right next to the Trivet Clinic. It's no longer standing, but there was apparently a tunnel from the basement of the clinic to the nurse's quarters where he was storing all of this. So I thought that was really interesting. So then Mr. Rivers, Leo Rivers, decided to change business plans and started a nursing home in the Trivet Clinic. So it became Leo's Rest Haven or Rivers Rest Home. There's a lot of different names that it went by. So we go from clinic, hospital, detox clinic, supper club, now nursing home. It did have quite some longevity as a nursing home. It actually went through two iterations. I believe the second iteration was owned by Leo's wife, because Leo actually, interestingly enough, Dr. Trivet and Leo both passed within like 5 or 6 years after obtaining the building. I did find that correlation a little interesting. But then it went from nursing home to a private residence. I actually did connect with the kids, now very much grown adults, who lived at the Trivet Clinic as a home, and they were responsible for essentially renovating and converting the clinic into what it looks like today, making it into a home. So, and from there, that family actually ran a nursery business, nursery like flowers and plants and everything. And they were using the land to grow different kinds of plants. They used part of the clinic as like their office and like a break room for their workers. So now even today, after this was the Campbell family that had bought the Trivet Clinic as a residence, converted it into a nursery, renovated it, made it into a home. They ended up selling at auction due to some messy divorce proceedings. And then another man, actually, I believe he was from Europe, or he is from Europe, but either he came to North Carolina or he's still in Europe. It's one of those little like weird things that I asked, but wasn't given a clear answer on. So it's like, well, you know, and he actually bought the business and continued with the nursery business, with the current owners today as his employees. And then the current owners ended up buying the clinic from him. So now they own the Trivet Clinic and they still continue to run the nursery business. So, for, you know, as I mentioned, the Trivet Clinic has worn many hats. And so it literally went from this evolution where the starting point was the hospital, the end point is a plant nursery.
And who knows what it could possibly be in the future. What I wonder about with the history, because that's, you know, the chronological, here's the businesses that it was, the stories that come along with all those different chapters in the history of the Trivet Clinic. Do you know any of those specifically?
Yeah, so I have heard, well, also heard and found several stories revolving around the Trivet Clinic. A lot of them do date back to when it was a hospital. And then there's a couple of, I guess we could call them anecdotal stories, because I didn't find newspaper clippings about it really. Well, I did, but not tying to specific names that I had heard.
Sure.
So there was a story, where it was a truck. It was one of those early 1930s trucks had, got into an accident on a curve. One of the drivers was taken to the Trivet Clinic to be treated and ended up passing away. There is a spirit believed to haunt the grounds of the Trivet Clinic. And, any psychic mediums that I've talked to who've been on the ground say that this person passed away from a car accident that happened nearby, which, you know, that's fairly interesting. There is another one. Any story about a child is going to be tragic, but, it's a little boy named Jimmy. He was playing outside with, you know, friends at his home. He was only about 4 or 5 years old, and he had somehow climbed up a vat that was full of, I think it was hot oil or hot water, but it was meant to like boil the skin off of pigs. You know, it was basically for pig, getting pig skin for, yeah. you know, that sort of thing. He fell into that vat and he was taken to the Trivet clinic to be treated because, you know, that was obviously an immediate medical emergency. And while he did get by, get through like the most intense part of, you know, being essentially boiled alive for, you know, several minutes, he actually ended up passing away from pneumonia. So it was like from one instance to another. And, I did find a few stories, in the newspaper about that. And this was a small town, a small community. So literally it was like old man Jenkins went out to check the mail at 2 PM instead of noon, like usual, like that's what made the news in that newspaper. tracking those sorts of stories down, you know, was fairly interesting. And then the other ones, there's several that revolve around the nursing home, which, you know, and a lot of the deaths are at the Trivet clinic as a nursing home did make it into the paper because, you know, that obituaries. So we have Philip, and he is believed to haunt the surgery room. Now, I didn't necessarily find a Philip with the first name of Philip, but I did find a Philip with that middle name. So, As someone who goes by their middle name, that's not shocking to me either, but it was cool to find that correlation. And then social media ended up being a really good research tool because the Trivet Clinic is, I find this amazing. The Trivet Clinic is very tied to its community. I mean, it opened in the 1930s. So there are people still living today whose parents and grandparents were treated at the clinic by Dr. Trivet. So, and there were people living in that community as well who worked or volunteered at the clinic when it was a nursing home. So I ended up finding a couple of nurses who did have Philip as their patient. So it was interesting to talk to them and get a gauge on his personality and experience and finding it lines up with the activity that I've personally encountered at the clinic when I try to talk to Philip.
Yeah, how interesting that there is that connection still to this day of people who had those experiences with Philip at the clinic. I know it's said that the clinic is haunted by more than 70 ghosts. Is it really haunted by more than 70 ghosts, in your opinion?
You know, I think right now counted about maybe 10, 15. There's a theory with the Trivet Clinic that it's like a portal or like a magnet for paranormal activity or for other spirits to come and visit. I will say anytime that I come to the Trivet Clinic, I do feel like I'm home. Like it really feels homey to me. It's very comfortable. I consider the spirits there to be friends. But I've also noticed, and I noticed this after helping the Trivet Clinic with some of their ghost tours. Every October, they do ghost tours every Friday and Saturday night. I helped out for 2 weekends in a row. And there was one incident that happened where, you know, we were doing a spirit box session with the group. And, you know, this was a group of like 20 people. And, you know, 20 people is kind of tight for a place like the Trivet Clinic. You know, but we were doing a ghost box session. You know, I kind of call these things the dog and pony show, where it's really just an introduction to like what we do as paranormal investigators. Sure. And this male voice kept coming through, and there's about 5 or 6 spirits tied to the basement. So I'm like, okay, well, it could be Shorty. It could be, you know, the bartender. You know, it could be Dr. Trivet. You know, there's a lot of things going on. But one of the people in attendance said, oh my gosh, that's my best friend who passed away. And I was like, really? And so I said, would you mind continuing to ask the questions, you know, or, you know, talking, you know, can you talk to him? And it actually ended up being a very emotional experience, and some information did come through on the spirit box that validated that it was him. So that's always made me wonder, and that's not the first time this has happened either, on investigations where someone else's loved ones come through. But it seems like that a lot of spirits either come with somebody else and then they end up staying. One of the people I interviewed in the book, Jen Milby, she compared the Trivet Clinic to, you know, the porch light being on. It's like, you know, if the porch light is on, the place is available and open to, you know, visitors, or it's a safe haven. And she compared the Trivet Clinic to being an illuminated porch light, which I thought was probably the perfect metaphor for it. But there is one other thing that has made me think about the whole 70 ghosts thing is, and actually this, I'm the one who discovered this information just a few years ago. Cause before that there was really no possible explanation for the 70 ghosts, because in all honesty, the Chervik Clinic wasn't like a place where there was like mass death or anything like that. So when the Campbell family bought the clinic, they were, you know, going through things and renovating. And apparently in the basement, there was a lot of things still there from when Dr. Trivett was there, which actually doesn't really surprise me because, you know, I don't know how well Leo actually cleaned things out and how often the nursing home cleaned things out. But this was confirmed by the daughter and the son of the Campbell family. When they were going through the basement, when their parents were going through the basement, they found all of these jars of body parts, which in the 1930s, doctor in a rural community, that's not necessarily out of the ordinary, you know, especially for like medical studies. And so I found that out and I said, okay, that's interesting. And she said, the daughter said that there was, you know, a lot of jars, and she counted maybe there was like 50 or so jars. And so I asked her, I said, what did your parents do with the jars after this discovery? And she said, oh, you know, the stone arch in front of the clinic? Yeah. Oh, well, my dad dug a hole and my parents threw the jars into the hole and just covered it up. So I was like, oh, okay. I mean, and not saying that there's any conscious spirits tied to those body parts, but could there be some sort of like residual or, residual imprint or energy imprint from those body parts? I'm not sure, but that was another one that was another bit of information that came to light that could support that theory.
When you talk about it possibly being a portal or something of that nature, explain, you know, how does something like that come about?
You know, that's a good question. So I was trying to track, like, when did these hauntings start? Like, do we have a starting point? And right now, the earliest starting point was when the home became a residence by the Campbell family. So I'm not sure exactly. So the Campbell family, they had three kids. There was the eldest son, there was a daughter, and then there was a younger son. Now, the younger son does have a significant age gap between the elder two. So he was, I believe their mother was pregnant with him when they moved into the clinic. So, and he had actually spent the longest amount of time at the clinic as a resident. So he lived there until he was well into his 20s. But the eldest son had a lot of negative experiences. He did have a bit of a troubled life too, sadly, that included, you know, substance abuse of various kinds. Mm-hmm. But he ended up getting the brunt of any negative activity at the clinic, and the sister more observed it and had some experiences herself. So I'm not sure if maybe something had happened with the eldest son that maybe opened something up. But I've also heard that land is tied with, well, okay, let's be honest, all North American land is tied with an indigenous community. Sure. So, but in this particular case, even more so, like there, and I've looked into the ley lines. I believe it's called the 37th parallel. It's a little, I think when I checked, it's a little north of that, but, it seems to be the consensus is there's something tied with the land that makes it a portal. But also I think with the, 'cause the paranormal investigation aspect of the clinic didn't start until Tim and Doug, the current owners, bought the place, and they sort of fell into the paranormal side of it by accident. So, and I wonder if maybe with the heightened attention on the Trivett Clinic now, it's still a nursery business outside, but the clinic itself is primarily used as paranormal investigations. So it makes me wonder, with everyone coming in with that intention of it being haunted and whatnot, you know, could that have opened something up as well? So that's a great question. And there's a lot of possibilities surrounding that.
Sure. I mean, it's open to conjecture as far as how, what that could possibly have been. You've talked to other paranormal researchers when doing research for the book. How did your findings compare to theirs?
you know, it was interesting. So I really wanted to interview other investigators to get their perspective on the place. I found that we all had similar experiences and we all have similar theories. And then of course there were a couple of stories that came up that I was like, oh, I've never experienced that. Interesting. So we all seem to have consistent experiences with the basement, the surgery room, you know, Philip, as well as a room called the Red Room. So it seems like those three places seem to be like the hotspot. Some people will get more encounters outside. I'm not one of them. Anytime I've tried to investigate outside, it's a fruitless endeavor. But I tend to get, for me personally, the most activity in the basement. But another thing that I've done was, as I interviewed other investigators, I did sort of do some comparisons demographic wise. Like there is a room that's across from the surgery room. It's known as Vicky's room. A lot of male investigators get a lot of activity in that room because apparently Vicky was a nursing home resident. Vicky was kind of a cougar.
Okay.
So male investigators, when they go in there, they tend to get a lot of action in there, figuratively. And, you know, but anytime I've gone in there, I've gotten this vibe of there's nothing for you in here, get out. Mm-hmm. So nothing like terribly negative. So that was interesting. And I will say there is, the Trivet Clinic does have a tendency to, you know, going off of the whole collecting spirits, the portal thing. They tend to get a couple of haunted objects too. And there's one room that has a wardrobe that was given to them because it was haunted. And basically the person who owned it was like, I don't want to deal with it, you know, give this place a home. Mm-hmm. And it came with its own little attachment of a little girl named Emily. So, and I have a cat that is meowing right now. Hang on. Let me close the door.
Maybe the cat knows something and wants to speak up. An attachment named Emily. What do you know about, yes. What do you know about Emily?
I actually know nothing about Emily besides that she came with the cabinet. But what was really interesting with this, though, was one of the first people to discover Emily, they didn't have a name. She had her daughter with her who is named Emily, which I was like, huh, okay. But she's not the one who named Emily, if that makes sense. Like she's not the one who said, oh, this entity's name is Emily. It was another investigator who said that, oh, this entity's name is Emily. And that was after that initial trip. So it's one of those. So it's definitely one of those situations where I'm like, okay. But in terms of having any sort of context surrounding Emily, like where did the wardrobe come from? Who owned it first? I wasn't able to get that information. I looked, but apparently it was one of those. It kind of reminded me of something from a horror movie where somebody just drops something off on the side of the road and you have no context at all. But I've never had really any negative experiences tied to the wardrobe. There is another entity that I guess made friends with Emily. That's a male spirit that's very socially awkward. He doesn't like to talk to people, which, you know, that's a vibe. I understand. Mm-hmm. But apparently he's very protective of Emily. So it's like all these spirits have created their own family units within the clinic, which is a little bit of an interesting perspective. But yeah, so trying to get information of Emily has been a bit tough, but with interviews, I realized like the timeline of this is when they got the cabinet. This is when the first bit of activity started with the cabinet. And, you know, this person picked up that it's a little girl spirit. Then this person picked up that it was Emily. So mm-hmm. it's an interesting timeline.
It definitely is. When you were saying earlier about the respective spirits have their own almost family units within the clinic, speak to that a little bit, because I've talked about that on this show. I don't remember with who. It's been several years ago. But it was in effect of the spirits that they could identify were not even from the same time period, but they mm-hmm. seemed to all be interacting with one another, almost as if there was some parental type spirits, there was some children type spirits, and on the other side, they were all working together, almost as if you were a family unit alive today. Is that what's going on there, or is it different?
I feel like that it is to a certain extent. Yeah, because in the basement, there's Majesty, who's the little girl spirit, who I believe said tag in that EVP recording that started it all. There's Majesty, who's about 4 or 5 years old. Jimmy, who's also about 4 or 5 years old. And I did wonder if they were the same kid, but people interpret it differently. But I got some validation via EVP that they're two separate entities. But then there's also a couple of nurses that haunt the basement. Their names are Helen and Polly. And then Dr. Trivid has been picked up in the basement, but he's kind of more of a, he just kind of pops in and out. He doesn't necessarily hang out often in there. And then there's an entity that is extremely tall, but he's been nicknamed Shorty. And then there is a bartender in the basement as well. And his name is escaping me right now. I have to pull up my notes, but, you know, they all seem to acknowledge each other and work together a bit, especially when boundaries need to be enforced. Like if Majesty doesn't want to talk anymore, or if Jimmy wants to dominate the conversation, I've heard like one of the, like Helen or Polly go, "Jimmy, sit down," you know, almost like a mom, like trying to control her kid.
So I
thought that was both fascinating and also hilarious. It very much reminded me of a mom who's like, "Jimmy, sit down."
You know? Sure, sure.
So I was like, okay. But then the entities upstairs, like I haven't really encountered Majesty on the second floor or Jimmy on the second floor. So it's like upstairs is like completely different. It's a completely different feeling. It's a very different vibration to it. So we have Emily up there, Philip tends to be, like his own, he's a bit of a loner. Like I've never really seen him with other entities. You know, I've never seen him like talk to anybody or interact with anyone else. And he's very much this, like weird, like anomaly. I guess I can understand that, you know, it's one of those, I don't want to talk to anybody. I still don't want to talk to anybody. Screw y'all, you know? And the entities in the red room, I haven't really had a good chance to identify them, so to speak. Meaning that, I mean, we have some theories as to you know, it's probably a man or a woman, that sort of thing. But really we don't have names. We don't have context or background stories. We don't really have any of that. So, it's definitely interesting there, but the people in the red room seem to be their own unit as well. So it's definitely a situation where I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, well, I mean, we definitely have something weird happening, but we don't exactly know what. And I want to also say they're almost all siloed too. Like they don't really talk to each other. So it makes me wonder, like, are the different levels of the Trivet Clinic, you know, basement, main floor, second floor, like, are they closed off from each other, or do they just choose not to talk to each other? I don't know. It's really interesting.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Alex. Tomorrow it continues with part two for you right here on The Grave Talks. If you'd like a commercial-free experience of the show and access to our full archive, become a Gravekeeper through Apple Podcasts. You can even try it for free right now, 3 days free on Apple Podcasts, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and get access to all of our extras, advanced episodes, the archive, all ad-free. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.